Manchaka upasubhutarubhyascha kripasindubhayevacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namah. Evam janam na prapatitam kupavari kupam kama vikamam anoya prapatam pasangam vidvatma satsarishinam bhagavan vivitam soham kitam nuvasade tavavitya seva. Sunyayate jagatsavam. When Srila Prabhupada arrived in 1965 in Boston Harbor in the east coast of the United States, he wrote a very deep, humble, and wonderful poem, which of course is quite famous. There he was, alone, as we know, with no money, knowing no one, practically speaking, having no followers. He wrote this poem. My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me. Now in this poem, Bengali poem, Prabhupada is setting the perfect example for anyone who desires to preach. He's expressing his heart, but also he's showing the heart and the mood of a preacher. Complete dependence, paratmanishtam, itanyara staya paratmanishtam. To cross the ocean of the material world upon the boat of full dependence upon Krishna, paratmanishtam. But I guess you have some business here for me. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? And indeed, it was a terrible place. When people from this country go to the West, it is for material gain. It is not for culture. It is not for spiritual advancement. Because it is a terrible place, full of degradation. Indeed, there is Shastric restriction from even crossing the ocean for a sannyasi, because the modes of material nature are so powerful, and Prabhupada will mention that point soon. Most of the population here, he says, is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. In Bharat, there is Satvagun, there is Shastra, there are the Acharyas, there are temples. There is purity. Absorbed in material life, Prabhupada continues, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva. I do not know how they will be able to understand it. Understand what? The transcendental message of Vasudeva. Vasudeva Kataruchi. How will they get a taste for this, for Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada is expressing his complete bewilderment in one sense. How is this going to come about? But I know, and here is the answer, I know that your causeless mercy can make everything possible because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? What does mellows of devotional service mean? The sweetness, the taste, the rasa. In the West, although there are, especially in the United States, it's quite a religious country. There are churches everywhere. But there is no concept of pure devotional service. What to speak of having the concept of God, the Supreme Parameshwara, being the Supreme Person with form of blackish complexion and playing the flute with a girlfriend, Srimati Radharani. Not the slightest conception of this. The only conception is sattva-gun, rajagun, and mostly tamagun. Excuse me, mostly rajagun and tamagun. But he's relying on Krishna to convince them of this message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches. Clutches means the tight grasp of illusion. It is only by the will of Krishna that it can happen. I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message, because Prabhupada is going to speak Krishna Katha. He's going to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. He's going to speak Bhagavad Gita. He's going to speak Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it is ununderstandable to these people unless you give them your mercy and allow them to understand the actual import and purport of this message. The words of Srimad Bhagavatam are your incarnation. What are the words of Srimad Bhagavatam? Your incarnation. Your Krishna's. He's praying to Krishna. And if a sober person, what is the opposite of being sober? Agitated? Aggressive? Yes. Intoxicated, especially. Sober, intoxicated. A sober person sees things clearly. An intoxicated person sees everything in a confused way. So if someone, Prabhupada says, listens repeatedly, again and again, submissively, letting the words of Srimad Bhagavatam enter his ear, submissively thinking that these words are meant for me. They are instructions given by Srila Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami, the Acharyas coming down to Srila Prabhupada. They are meant for me, their instructions. For me to take, imbibe for myself. If someone does that, then they will be able to understand your message. Then Prabhupada quotes Bhagavatam, first canto, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna, which explains how if we become eager to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, then Krishna from within the heart himself cleanses all the inauspiciousness. And then one will become happy. And then one will give oneself to Krishna. And how does that come about? Eagerness to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He will become liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion. And thus, all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. So Prabhupada is explaining what his hope was and his faith was and why he felt confident, because he had the first volume printed of Srimad Bhagavatam in three volumes. He had the first canto with him. somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. One person to speak to 200 million people, and he, not knowing any of them, having different conceptions, coming from a different culture, he was fully dependent on Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the process of hearing. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or a failure as you like. It is not in my hands. It is up to you, O Lord. O spiritual master of the worlds, I can simply repeat your message, so if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Please remember this stanza. If you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding, able to penetrate through their ear into their heart, through their intelligence, but into the heart, so that they will become devotees, which is your message, that they will give themselves to you and stop their efforts of trying to become the master of this world, influenced by which modes of nature? Passion and ignorance. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. Look what Prabhupada is saying. Even my words will, even though I'm repeating, a parrot can say, "You're not your body. You're not your body." But if Prabhupada says, "You're not your body," it has a different weight. Because realization backs up the words. So even for this, he's dependent upon the causeless mercy of Krishna to make his words pure. I am sure, if you do this, that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will feel gladdened, and thus become liberated from the unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like Kaputli. What is Kaputli? In your hands. Completely dependent, surrendered. So if you have brought me here to dance, if you have brought me here to make me dance, who is going to have to pull the strings to make me dance? A puppet has no ability to dance on his own. If you have brought me here to make me dance, then make me dance. Make me dance. O Lord, make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, Prabhupada says. Nor do I have any knowledge. But I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta. And now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of that name, Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, United States of America, 18th of September, 1965. So when Prabhupada boarded from the ship in New York, he said when he walked out, he did not know whether to turn left or right. He did not know anyone. No money, nothing, no credit cards. Only Krishna and the order of his Guru Maharaj. Now, 6 months later, so this was dated what month? September, yes? So September, October, November, December, January, February, March. 6 months later, we have a recording, a short recording, I've cut out parts, just to see how Prabhupada was preaching, was spreading the message of Krishna, repeating the words of the Bhagavatam and what he was trying to do, and how he did it, and what he was up against. To understand Prabhupada, we cannot look at ISKCON today. We have to see that Prabhupada indeed was so wealthy, but his wealth was not manifest in any type of money or influence in this country. He was indeed Tridandi Bhikshu, a beggar. Now you can take out your sheets of the lecture and let's hear something. Now we may have to, and I'm going to stop and start, but we'll try to understand what Prabhupada was up against and what he was trying to accomplish, how difficult it was and what he was accomplishing. So we'll have to, who's on the sound? We'll have to undoubtedly adjust the sound here. Who will be, okay. It's starting.
The book does not.
Okay, make it hot, make the sound louder, because there's nothing coming out. We've done it again.
There are six.
My fault this time, it wasn't we. No?
Yes. Opulent.
Okay, I'll start it again. Oh. This way.
Next. The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. 6th Canto, 1st Chapter, Text Number 2, given by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Yes, the book does not say Krishna Uvas. It is Bhagavan Uvas. Now we should understand what is the meaning of Bhagavan. Bhava means opulence. There are six kinds of opulence. And what are
six? Yes. What?
Opulence. Do you follow? Opulence.
This is the first problem. Prabhupada is saying, he doesn't, where do you begin? This is so hard to understand when you've been brought up in India. Where do you begin to teach a Westerner, an American, someone from Europe, Australia, Africa, anywhere but India, where do you begin when you are trying to teach them about Krishna consciousness? They don't know who Krishna is. They don't know you're not your body. They don't know the Bhagavad Gita. They don't know the Devas. They don't know what a mandir is. They don't know what prasadam is. They don't know what a sari is. They don't know what a dhoti is. They don't know what japamala is. They don't know what tilak is. Where do you begin? They don't know what a madanga is. They don't know what arti is. Where do you begin? They don't have the concepts even. They don't have the concept that God is a person. Where do you begin? So Prabhupada is here saying Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. We read that every time we read the Bhagavad Gita, every chapter. But he has to explain what Bhagavan means. Bhaga, opulence, avan, he who possesses all opulence. So that's the first problem. They don't know what Bhagavan means, person, God. So he says it means, Bhaga means opulence. And the first thing is one of the people in the audience in March 66 says, what? They can't either understand what Prabhupada's accent, or they're not sure what the word opulence means. So Prabhupada says, opulence. And the man says, opulence? Do you follow opulence? Yes, I do. Another problem, language, accents, subtleties of language. So Prabhupada's going to continue with yes. What are the opulences?
What are the opulences? Wealth is opulence. Then strength is opulence. Then Sajjasya Samakkasya Vidya strength and fame. Fame is also opulence. Just like Lord Jesus Christ. The whole Christian world is known. Everyone, apart from them, President Johnson. Now the whole America and the whole world knows who is President Johnson. Mahatma Gandhi. The famous. So fame is also opulent. And nobody knows me, but he is also a person.
This is the reality. Prabhupada is saying, no one knows me. At that time, he wasn't famous. No one knew him, and he knew no one, practically speaking. But this Prabhupada is using a teaching technique. By you take something, a concept that someone knows and is aware of, and you attach the unknown to the known. So fame. So people in the West know Lord Jesus Christ. People in the West know, in the United States, know the then president, President Johnson. So there is fame. This is an opulence. And Prabhupada says, but me no one knows. But he, meaning Krishna, he is also a person. Bhagavan, Krishna, famous. Like all these famous people, the Supreme is a person. Let's continue.
Known throughout the whole world. So this is an opulence. And just like your Rockefeller, they're very rich. Everyone knows in the world. So they are opulent by wealth. Similarly, somebody is opulent by fame, and somebody is opulent by strength. So strength is opulent, wealth is opulent, and fame is opulent. And then beauty is also opulent. If one man or woman is very beautiful, he attracts persons. So anything that attracts that is called opulent. A wealthy man attracts. A strong man attracts. A famous man attracts. If somebody famous man comes here, so many people will gather to receive him. So these are opulences. Wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. Six.
What happened?
So these are opulences. Wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. Six. Anyone who possesses all these six opulences in full, he is God. That is the definition of God.
So here, Prabhupada he wants to give them something. Of course, they are wasting their lives, and influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance, the result is distress. He wants the people to be happy. He has a message, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. He has a message, live your life responsibly. Become a devotee of Krishna. Give up the nonsense things in your life. They are the cause of your misery, and you are trying to get happiness from them. But first, he's explaining Bhagavan, Krishna, God. He's a person who has all opulences. Sat Aishwarya Purna, look. He's so beautiful. Isn't he so beautiful? He's all attractive. Become attracted to him, Prabhupada wants to tell. And that, adishtayam manasthayam vishaya upasevate, put that in your consciousness. Put Krishna, become Krishna conscious, and that will save you from death. It will bring you to Krishna's lotus feet. But first you have to have some knowledge who Bhagavan is. This is the definition of God. Not just Ishwara, controller, but he's all attractive. He's all attractive. He's unlimitedly wealthy, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly strong, unlimitedly beautiful. There is no limit to his beauty. Just think about what that means. There is no limit to his beauty or strength or wealth. So he's introducing this concept that God is an all-opulent, all-attractive person. Let's continue.
Anyone. So when Krishna was present on this earth,
he actually came to this earth.
His opulence is in full. Of course, we have got all these historical records about him. Now, so far as wealth is concerned, he had 16,000. And for each of them, he built a palace.
So this, as you may guess, is very hard for a Westerner to accept, understand, accept, believe. But Prabhupada doesn't hesitate in saying it. God is opulent. He had 16,108 wives. He's trying to explain first that he's a person, and now, not only is he a person, but he's married. And not only is he married, he has 16,000 wives. Not only 16,108, and each he had a palace for. We have to understand what Prabhupada did. And then, perhaps, and that, from what we heard Prabhupada's prayer, we'll understand how he did it and what his secret was. As Krishna was working through him. Mahaprabhu was working through him. His Guru Maharaj was working through him to fulfill their desire. And he was fully surrendered, fully sincere in his mission, which was their mission, and he had no other interest at all except for their interest and their mission. Shuddha, pure surrender, pure love, pure devotional service. So how is Prabhupada going to convince these people that God is a person and he has 16,000 wives? Let's hear.
And all those palaces were so nicely built that there was no need of electricity or light. It was bedecked with jewels. So day and night they were pleasant, you see. So these descriptions are there. But if we forget that that he is God, then this will be something like story, that how a man can marry 16,000 wives. How a man. But we should always remember that he is God. He is all powerful.
So here is a very simple explanation. If you accept the concept of God, you cannot deny that he's all-powerful. And if you say that he's all-powerful, you can't say that he's not capable of doing this. If he wants to, if he desires to have 16,108 palaces, then who is going to stop him? Who can stop him? If he wanted to have 16 billion wives and 16 billion palaces, why can't he do it if he is all powerful? He has achintya shakti, unlimited potency. This is what God means, not just some abstract figure who controls everything. When he's happy with you, you win at the stock market, and when he's unhappy with you, he throws a lightning bolt on your head. This is not God. This is something to do with one little misunderstood aspect of God. So Prabhupada has to remove all these different improper conceptions of Krishna at the same time, explain who Krishna is, and he has full faith that if he opens his heart, which is filled with Krishna, and speaks the Bhagavatam, then everyone will become attracted, because Krishna indeed is all attractive. Now listen to this next part and read it very, very carefully. He is all powerful.
And for no other person such historical records are there, only for Krishna. So in strength also, nobody could conquer him. And beauty, so far beauty is concerned, when he was on the battlefield, have you seen any picture of Krishna? Have you seen? No. Of course, anyone of you has seen Krishna when...
Did you hear that? He asked the audience, have any of you, you'll see Krishna, so beautiful, have any of you ever seen a picture of Krishna? Has anyone seen? No? Has anyone seen a picture of Krishna? No one that he was speaking to, what to speak of understanding the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, understanding the Sanskrit of the meaning of Bhagavan, or chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, or understanding the Vidhi, the Yam Niyam. No one had even seen a picture of Krishna. And you're trying to explain this to them. See what Prabhupada has done. Something impossible. Actually, it was impossible. And he did it. Have any seen a picture of Krishna? Have you seen? Oh no? Anyone, have you seen Krishna? Let's continue.
He was present in
Prabhupada's not discouraged.
That time he was about 90 years old. 90 years old. He had his great-grandchildren. He married 16,000 wives, and each wife had 10 children. And those 10 children, they also got each 10, 12 children, just, and their children also. Because he was at that time 90 years old, he got at the time great-grandchildren also. So his family was very great. Now, if you see the picture of Krishna, you will see him just like a boy of 22, 25 years. He was so beautiful.
He is so beautiful. He is so beautiful. But how will these Westerners understand these things? God's children, wife, first 16,000 wives, then each one he had 10 children, and each one of those had 10 children. Sometimes in our preaching, we want to be very careful to present things very exactly to not disturb anyone so they'll have difficulty believing it. Prabhupada had his deep conviction and purity, and that's what was driving him forward to speak in this amazing way.
The sign of God. It is stated in Brahma Sanhita. Advaitayachitayanadiyanantarupam adyam purana purusam navajovanancha. He is the original person. Because from God everyone has God. Therefore he is the original person. Adyam purana purusam. Purana is the oldest person. He is still navajovanancha. Whenever you see God, that is, this is the sign of God. He'll find it just like a youth, a new youth. Youthfulness means 16 to 24 years. So, Navajovana. That is the sign of God. So he was so beautiful that when he was a boy of 15 years old, of the same age girls of his age, they were after him. He was so beautiful. So, in beauty, he was super excellent. In wealth, he was super excellent. In strength, he was super excellent. And in knowledge.
Now here, Prabhupada is moving to the real point. All that he's explained so far is Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Who is speaking? Because one of the opulences is in the Sadaishwarya Purna is that he's full of knowledge. And Prabhupada has the Bhagavad Gita in front of him, and he's speaking about the Bhagavad Gita, and he's introducing the concept of Shastra. Because through Shastra only can we know things about Krishna and his personality. Otherwise, someone will say, you say that Krishna likes cows? Well, I think Krishna likes bakri. You say he likes to play the flute? I think he likes to play the saxophone. You say he likes peacock feathers, I say he likes ostrich feathers. You say he's dark in complexion, I say he's light in complexion. Just like recently in Vrindavan, there was a big furor because one of the pujaris at Banki Bihari temple gave the deity, you know what? Jeans and a mobile phone. So what, of course, we can understand why he did that. Someone must have given him something to make it inspire him. But this is not Shastra. This is the point. Shastra tells who Krishna is, and this is, and what he does, and what he looks like, what he likes, what he doesn't like. So this is what Prabhupada had said in his prayers. I am sure that if they submissively and repeatedly just hear your words in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, Srinvatam Svakata Punya, Punya Shravana Kirtanam Ridyantistoya Bhadanani Vidanotisarits, if they just hear this, the potency of Shastra will affect their consciousness and they will get what? They will get Shraddha. They will get faith just by hearing. But to get them to hear, now Prabhupada is explaining that Krishna has unlimited knowledge. Let's listen further.
Gita. Apart from other knowledge which is imparted to other, now here is a book which was imparted to Arjuna. Now, it is so the depth of knowledge that people are still considered great, great scholars. We are not reading, but Dr. Radhakrishnan, one of the greatest scholars of the world, now he is the president of India. He is discussing. Professor Einstein, he was living here in America. He was a German Jew. And I think he was living in America. He was a great student of this Bhagavad Gita. Hitler was a great student of Bhagavad Gita. And there are many scholars who are still reading Bhagavad Gita, trying to understand. Just see what depth of knowledge he has given. It is many.
So Prabhupada is, because ultimately, I have studied this point. What is the ultimate argument for Shastra? It is that the great acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Mahaprabhu, Madhvacharya, even Shankaracharya, there may be some disagreements on philosophy, but they all base everything that they say on Shastra. So this is the argument, the ultimate argument that Prabhupada gave, why we accept Shastra, or why don't we don't think it's mythology. Because these greatest, greatest scholars accepted it, and they were pure, and beyond the cheating propensity. And Prabhupada would say, do you think they are fools? Just accepting some mythology, accepting some fiction, and basing their lives on some fiction? Do you think they were fools? But if Prabhupada says to these people that Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Shankaracharya, they have no idea who these people are. So he's saying this knowledge is so deep that great scholars and great famous personalities, and he even uses the name, amazingly enough, of Hitler here, who is not considered such a great man at this point, but powerful man. And Radhakrishna Prabhupada, Dr. Radhakrishna Prabhupada said, he has written Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we're not using that Bhagavad Gita because Prabhupada was actually furious with some of the comments he made in his purports about Bhagavad Gita. But he's showing it's such an important, deep knowledge because it's coming from Krishna, who is the reservoir of all knowledge. Let's continue.
By Krishna. So in knowledge, in wealth, in strength, in beauty, and everything was up to that. That's what he's talking about. You cannot accept any ordinary man as Bhagavan. So that's Bhagavan. Now, Bhagavan Uvasa, and because he has been accepted as the spiritual master, just like a teacher has the right to sometimes rebuke this student. So in the first instance, he is rebuking Arjuna in the following words, that asachyan anusotasthan prajnabadan subhasase gatasun agatasun cha nanusotanti pandita. Arjuna, you are speaking just like a very great learned man, but you are, in other words, you are a fool. You do not know.
So Prabhupada is showing Bhagavan in action here. He's teaching Arjuna, and the first thing he's doing is chastising Arjuna. Why is he chastising Arjuna? Indirectly, Prabhupada will explain how Krishna is calling him a fool.
How things are going on. Because Pandita, those who are learned men, they would not have lamented just like you are doing. That means indirectly he says, Pandita means learned. Learned man does not lament over a dead body or a living body. Gatasun or gatasunst. Sunst means life. One has lost his life and one has got his life. A body, a living body and a dead body. A living body and dead body. Just mark the point that a learned man, as you are lamenting over the subject of killing your friends and relatives, but a learned man would not have lamented like this. That means you are a fool. When he says, just like if I say, Mr. Green, what you have done, any intelligent man should not have done this. So this is indirectly saying that you are not intelligent. It is in a gentleman's way of speaking, Mr. Green, what you are doing, no intelligent man can do this. That means you are not intelligent. So here he says you are lamenting over the body of your relative because in the fight you are considering that my friends and my relatives will be killed. So that means they are living bodies and you are lamenting over their killing. So this sort of lamentation is never done by a learned man.
So just see how this whole concept of the Bhagavad Gita is being placed before these people who don't know anything. And look what this essential first principle is. The unavoidable first principle of spiritual life is we are not our body. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. And look what Krishna is telling Arjuna, that if you think that killing your relatives and friends in the battle is bad, you are an illusion. How difficult is that to understand? Think about what that means. Killing your relatives, disappointing your relatives, the people who love you most in this world, your family members, killing them is illusion because they cannot die. They are souls. And you're a fool if you don't base your actions on true knowledge rather than sentiment. And this is the knowledge that Krishna is telling Arjuna. To free him from illusion, you are not your body, you're an eternal soul. And your business is to do what I say and act to please me. And this is what will give you happiness. But look at this example. Arjuna was declining to fight his relatives and kill them, his guru, Dronacharya, his grandfather, Bhishma, and Krishna, rather than saying, oh, you are so noble, you will give up your kingdom, so you don't have to kill these people who were kind to you. Rather than calling him noble, he's saying, you are a fool. Shattering completely with no compromise the material concept of life. This was the boldness of Prabhupada's preaching. Although he presented everything with reason, argument, and the incredible sweetness of his personality, this was completely revolutionary, it was new, it was astounding. And Prabhupada did this just as he said he would do, on the order of his Guru Maharaj, depending fully on Krishna. He was telling the people that he was speaking to that everything that you're doing is foolish because it is based on illusion. His preaching was telling, as he's saying indirectly here, the indirect way of speaking, describing Krishna's word, he's telling the people that he's speaking to, you're all fools. Because you're accepting the body as you. You're a fool. In a sweet way, he's chastising them completely. But he was so sweet, and there was no enmity, no bad feeling, no envy on his part. Everyone accepted the medicine. No, not everyone could take it, but everyone accepted it from Prabhupada because it was selflessly delivered. But look at what Prabhupada had to do. Now we'll just complete it.
Nanda Nevadan. Gatasum Agatasum Sananu Sutanti Pandita. Those who are learned, one who is learned, he does not lament over the body. Either a living body or dead body. There is no question. Now, because one who knows the distinction between the body and the soul, far become just like you have heard the name of Socrates.
Prabhupada is saying, okay, this is not just an amazing philosophy coming from India, this is from your own Western culture. Socrates, firmly convinced that he was not his body, the philosopher Socrates.
Philosopher, Greek philosopher. He believed in the immortality of soul. So he was punished in the court. Hemlock was offered
poison,
to him.
Poison.
At all life. If you believe the immortality of soul, then you drink this hemlock poison. So he drank. Because he was firmly convinced that even if I drink this poison, my body will be destroyed. By destruction of my body, I am not going to be. But you are convinced. So it is not learned. So a pandit, when a learned man must know that this body and soul, the distinction, the difference between body and soul, the body is not soul and the soul is not body. And one who knows, he is learned. This instruction is given first. So, for spiritual advancement, this first knowledge that the body and the soul is different. This body cannot be identified with the soul. The soul is there, but body is not soul. Body is not soul. So every learned man knows it, and we should be, I think, we can stop here.
So Prabhupada may have temporarily stopped there, but he continued. And it was quite amazing. The first lesson, how difficult. What is the first lesson in knowledge? You're not your body. First lesson. To even explain the basic concepts, to get people to even listen, to get people to accept it, to get people to act on it. The first lesson, so amazing. And Prabhupada was completely fixed in this. So this is chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. And then there's chapter 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, 8 up to 18. And a long time later, the message comes that you should give yourself to Krishna. Sarvadamam Prityaja. Manmanam Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji. You should become my devotee. You should think about me. Your actions should be centered on pleasing me. But as every journey begins with a first step, and the first steps sometimes are the most difficult. Look what Prabhupada had to do here. And he never became discouraged. Or even if he did sometimes become discouraged, he never let that stop him. There were always problems. It's not that nowadays there are problems, and in Prabhupada's time there weren't problems. From the very beginning there were problems, because you're dealing with individuals who are conditioned, who are controlled by the modes of passion, ignorance, and even goodness. So there must be problems, because the message that Prabhupada is giving is so radical and completely different from the material world, material life. There must be problems. And we see Prabhupada's mood in his presentation. How carefully. What was that? If you give me the power to make my words pure and to make it my words so that they can understand. Because otherwise it is impossible due to their coverings of passion and ignorance. So then there was the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadhamam Pratyaja. How are they going to understand that? That they should give their lives to Krishna. And how are they going to understand the Bhagavatam that starts in the first canto and ends in the 12th canto, but showing the shining face of Krishna in the 10th canto? He speaks about it. Krishna had wives, but how will they understand Krishna's dealings with the residents of Brajabhumi? So Prabhupada's faith was in the holy name, in the Bhagavatam, and hearing the basic processes, Sarup Siddha processes of bhakti that are potent in and of themselves, the Bhagavatam, association with devotees, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity, and living and associating in holy places, firm faith in this. And very much his faith was in his books. I would like to read you something that's quite amazing about Prabhupada's books. Now this is, I'm reading first, we'll read two little sections, and please listen carefully to this. In 1976, in London, Hari Sori, Prabhupada's servant, who was serving Prabhupada at that time, was speaking to Prabhupada. It's a short section. So Hari Kesh Prabhu, he was also serving Prabhupada. So he went outside to attend some work. So this is from Hari Sori Prabhu's book. So he went out to attend some work. I remained a few minutes more alone with His Divine Grace. During the conversation, I had flipped through the pages of a new book and had noticed a picture of Srila Prabhupada's kitchen in Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan, And I now told him about it, that that picture was in the book. Oh, where is it? He enthusiastically asked. I found the page for him. Opportunities like this don't arise frequently. So as he inspected the brownish photo of Prabhupada in the kitchen of Radha Damodar, I asked a few questions about Prabhupada's life before ISKCON. Through that window, you could see Rupa Goswami's samadhi. And for those two rooms, they were charging 5 rupees a month, he said to Prabhupada. Yes, Prabhupada said, these rooms were broken. So they told me, you can repair these, and whatever you like, you can give. So I thought, I don't need much space. Before me, there was a tenant in that other room. He was paying 3 rupees. So I thought, 2 rooms, but I have spent money, so I'll give him 5 rupees. Now I am giving them 10 rupees. To retain it? Yes. Sometimes the devotees go down there, Hari Suri said, and clean out the rooms, I told him, and they have kirtan there sometimes. I think this is the first book that sometimes included this photo. Yes, it was very calm and quiet. And people used to offer obeisances from outside because they knew. Practically everyone knew me. So they used to offer, you were very well known in Vrindavan before you came? Not very well known, but people knew me. Because you were writing? Yes. Or because of your ambition to come to the West? No. At that time there was no such thing, Prabhupada replied. I was living there, a retired man. It sounds like before he had taken sannyas even. So when you went to Vrindavan, you'd given up the idea of coming to the West? No, coming to the West, the idea was there. But I was planning how to go there, how to preach there, how to take some books, how to bring them. Everything I was doing alone. So as soon as you had some books, then you were ready? Yes. Then I decided. Everything was being dictated by superior. With Srila Prabhupada in such a mood, I took the courage to bring up something Hari Kesh one time mentioned to me. I was told that one day you were told by Rupa Goswami that you must go. Prabhupada's mood changed slightly. But that was an open secret, he said dismissively. Everyone knew. Then he changed the subject. Now, there is one book written by one of Prabhupada's disciples, Mula Prakriti Mataji, who has left this world. And there's an interview in there with one person who had some association with Prabhupada who is still alive today. And he's saying about one experience he had with Prabhupada. There were several times I recall telling me about his Gurudev, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Once he had a fever and was sitting covered with a cloth and blanket reading Srimad Bhagavatam. I bowed my head to his feet and said, "You're not feeling well?" He said, "No, I have a cold. So this little medicinal cure will be helpful." The next day, when I returned, he was happy, healthy, and was writing, maybe a commentary. I did not see. I asked, "Today you're feeling better?" He answered very mysteriously, "Oh yes." I asked again and he said, "At night, my Prabhupada came to me in a dream. He encouraged me saying, you do work like Narottama Thakur, like Srinivasa Charja, and like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He told me joyfully, I have received mercy from my Gurudev. He blessed me and he has given me power. I was too much anxious for the Bhagavatam commentary. He said, you just write and all 6 Goswamis will help you." He also mentioned that his Gurudev had come in front of him, Prabhupada, about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, had come in front of him in sannyas dress 2 or 3 times when he had been sick, ill. And during these months, when I would visit him in his rooms at Radha Damodar, he occasionally told me some special things that I understood as secrets in his bhajan. Once I came early in the morning in winter time. He was chanting Hari Nam very deeply, and I saw tears coming from his eyes. When I inquired several times for him to tell me anything, he said that he had received a visit last night in his courtyard by Srila Rupa Goswami Samadhi. He saw some very beautiful persons. One was wearing only kopins and was chanting on large tulsi mala around his neck. His eyes were large like lotus flowers, and he was extremely effulgent. Also coming there was another personality, dressed similarly, but older and taller, very kindly to him. Behind them there was a much younger sadhu, whose beauty and sweetness were captivating. Srila Prabhupada told me they were Srila Rupa Goswami, the open secret, Srila Sanatana Goswami, and their nephew Jiva Goswami. He said they spoke to him and giving him mercy and guidance for his writing and for his future preaching. I tried to ask more, but this was all he would tell me. So that was an external little bit explanation of what Prabhupada himself had told Hari Sauri Prabhu. And therefore Prabhupada stressed his book distribution and book writing, and not only book writing, book publication, and book distribution, but he also stressed one more thing related to his books, and what was that? Reading and studying. Because this is association with Prabhupada and the Acharyas. I personally heard Prabhupada say, my only criticism of the devotees is that they think my books are for distribution, not for reading. And then he imitated a book person distributing books, saying, here, please take this book. And then the person he was giving it to said, oh, what is in it? And then Prabhupada said, I don't know, it's for you. And then he said, why are we so much interested in book distribution? Because it is distribution of knowledge. It is distribution of knowledge. He repeated it twice. Because for the lack of this, yesterday I was listening to a lecture of Prabhupada, and he said, why is the guru accepted Shakshadhari, equal to God? And he answered that question saying, because he's giving knowledge of Krishna, of God, therefore he's accepted as none different from him. If Prabhupada walked in this room, this temple room, that we can't imagine really, but if he walked in here, we'd jump up, we'd offer obeisances, we'd be running around looking for garlands, we'd worship him, we would be crying, we would be throwing ourselves on the ground, but what would we want him to do? We'd offer him a seat, we'd bathe his feet, but then what? What would we want him to do? Speak, exactly. We'd want him to speak. Guru Mukhya Padma Vakya Chitite Kuriya Aikya. And we would want to hear those words emanating from his lotus mouth, like as if, exactly as if, they were personal instructions for us, and take those completely in that way and live our life by that. Let his words mold our life, not let our mind and the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance or the mode of goodness mold our life, but let these transcendental knowledge mold and change our way of living. Because if we live according to the modes of material nature, the result is quite predictable. No happiness, repeated birth, repeated death. Brahman the Brahmate. But if we lead our life and let the instructions, the books of Prabhupada, the words of Prabhupada, the kindness of Prabhupada, if we let them affect us and take them. I was listening to a lecture this morning of Prabhupada, Prabhupada lecturing in Hong Kong. He was speaking to some children. And I saw my mind's reaction was, oh, I've heard this before, I've heard that before, I've heard that before. I was watching my mind react in that way, and I wasn't hearing and letting the words enter my heart, and because I was thinking the words weren't for me. There were some children spoken in Hong Kong 31 years ago. I wasn't thinking that these instructions were for me and that I should hear every word. From the first lesson, if I don't hear the words of the first lesson, you're not your body. How will I go on to understand, worship, love, serve? See, Sri Radha Gopinath and Sri Vrindavan Dham. So very much it's a quality of hearing. And hearing isn't done so much with the ears as it is done with the heart, the mind is what I was thinking. But therefore Prabhupada said, repeatedly, I have faith that if repeatedly and submissively they hear your words, O Krishna, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then everything will work. Now make me dance so that my words become pure, that I repeat your message properly. Make me dance. Fulfill the purport of my name of Bhakti Vedanta. So Prabhupada was completely dedicated to this. There was no other interest. And it was so hard, in one sense, to be near him, around him over a long time period, because he only had one thing on his mind, how to fulfill the mission of his Guru Maharaj, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, preaching Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, all over the world. All over the world. All over the world. All over the world. And there was never enough devotees, never enough money, because as Krishna provided facility, Prabhupada's desires and to preach, to make his offering, expanded hundreds and hundreds of times more. And what was the instruction he gave about the book distribution? Double it. How could you be peaceful if every year you have to double it? No matter what you did, it was going to give you trouble the next year because you'd have to do twice as much. Double it, and double it, and double it. It was the perfect instruction for the American mind, I think, actually. Double it, and double it, and double it. Always be engaged. Always be engaged in some type of service. Always chant Hare Krishna. And when I listened to the talk that Prabhupada gave to the children, that's when I understood what my mind was doing. Prabhupada said this, that you should chant Hare Krishna continuously, always, constantly. And I understood that instruction was definitely meant for me. He had given it to me another time also. So then I understood what my mind had been doing to me. So we have to prepare the mind to read. Therefore, sattva guna is so good, it is not an end in itself, but it's to prepare the consciousness to be able to receive the transcendental message and take it deeply into the heart and then act on it and serve properly. And then the result will be wonderful. It'll be wonderful. It'll be Radha Gopinath Seva, Goloka Vrindavan, Radha Shyamasundar Seva, and Goloka Vrindavan. But if the heart is not properly cleaned and love does not develop in the heart, we will not get there. We may want to go there, but there's one problem. And the problem is two problems, excuse me. Big false ego and no proper love. So we may want to go there. I'd love to go to Goloka Vrindavan. I could take photographs, make a nice slideshow. Then I can come back and say, I've just been to Goloka Vrindavan and you want to see my slideshow of Goloka Vrindavan. Me in the center. But you cannot take false ego. False ego keeps us in the material world. We have to become very humble, develop a serving mood, the other, I'll end by two other things. One is that, you know, I can't remember the exact line, unfortunately, the exact sloka, but Prabhupada, when he wrote a Vyasa Puja offering for his Guru Maharaj, that adore you all. You know it?
Sweeter than heaven.
Yes, that's the one. Absolute ascension, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity, thou hast removed. Absolute ascension, conscious. He's a person. He's Krishna. He's the most beautiful person. He's Bhagavan. He's the all-attractive, all-famous, all-powerful, all-beautiful, all-sweet person. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity, thou hast removed. I was recently reading in the 13th chapter of Madhya Lila, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Dancing at Rathayatra, or it was actually in the first chapter of Madhya Lila, where Rupa Goswami, there's a verse quoted of Srila Rupa Goswami, where he talks about the separation of Srimati Radharani from Sri Krishna in Vrindavan. And when Mahaprabhu saw this sloka, he said what? How has Srila Rupa Goswami, how did he know my mind? So in a purport to this, Srila Prabhupada says that he made a Vyasa Puja offering to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And his Guru Maharaj's mood about that absolute ascension, thou hast proved, impersonal calamity, thou hast removed. His mood was, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mood was, how has he understood my mind? Prabhupada explains this in a purport. And that was so interesting to me because when I gave one class in Urupi recently, and one young student, Mataji, asked the question, why is it I'm reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, but everywhere Prabhupada simply criticizes the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, calls them rascals, calls them this, calls them that. She actually asked that question. Why does Prabhupada do that? So I explained that how impersonal realization or the thought of Mayavad philosophy, it confuses one so deeply. And anyabhilasita sanyam janakama navrita, that this poison of gyan, the desire for gyan to want to become one with the Lord, it is worse than the poison of karma or material desires. And once it is in there, you cannot remove it from the heart. It is such a poison. So I explained that is why Prabhupada always criticized. But that isn't actually the reason why Prabhupada always criticized the Mayavadis. It is because he knew the heart of his Guru Maharaj. Nivishesha Sunyavadi Prashkatya Deyazatarane. He knew that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had pointed to the Mayavadis that as the thing that has ruined the theistic conception of God, that stops people more than even materialism from loving Krishna, from loving, developing their relationship with Radha Gopinath. So that is why Prabhupada, as a perfect servant of his Guru Maharaj, he knew the heart, and therefore he was on the Jaladutta. And therefore, as a servant of Guru, he was also, naturally, because Sri Guru is a servant of Guru Parampara, and also a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, and also a servant of C.C. Radha Gopinath. There is no duality in that. So because he was a servant of this line, he was on the Jaladutta, praying for mercy. And therefore, because there was no false ego involved, he was there as a servant, as we heard. Therefore, Krishna worked through him in such a wonderful, wonderful way. So to conclude, I would like to read the second of the poems that Prabhupada read before. The second one was actually when he arrived in Boston, but the one before that, on the Jaladutta. And then we'll end here. And then... Okay, we'll just... This is what Prabhupada says. This was his mood on the Jaladutta. I emphatically say to you, O brothers, O bhai, O sisters also, you will obtain your good fortune with the Supreme Lord Krishna only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is very dear to Lord Gauranga, the son of Mother Sachi, is unparalleled in his service to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. He is that great saintly spiritual master who bestows intense devotion to Krishna at different places throughout the world. By his strong desire, the holy name of Lord Gauranga will spread throughout all the countries of the Western world and all the cities, towns, and villages of the earth. From all the oceans, seas, rivers, and streams, everyone will chant the holy name of Krishna. As the vast mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu conquers all directions, a flood of transcendental ecstasy will certainly cover the land. When all the sinful, miserable living entities become happy, then the desire of the Vaishnavas is fulfilled. Although my Guru Maharaj ordered me to accomplish this mission, I am not worthy or fit to do it. I am very fallen and insignificant. Now looking back 40 years, Prabhupada's prayer seems still even more amazing. I am not worthy or fit to do it. I am very fallen and insignificant. Therefore, O Lord, now I am begging for your mercy so that I may become worthy, for you are the wisest and most experienced of all. If you bestow your power, by serving the spiritual master, one attains the absolute truth. One's life becomes successful. If that service is obtained, again, service, service, service. If we don't have the mood, a pure mood of service, we can never be in Goloka Vrindavan because we will try to take the position of Krishna. If we are envious, we will try to take the position of Krishna and enjoy there. So that Dasya Bhav has to be established fully in the heart. Surrendered Dasya Bhav. So if you bestow your power by serving the spiritual master, one attains the absolute truth. One's life becomes successful. If that service is obtained, then one becomes happy and gets your association due to good fortune. My dear Lord, quoting from Bhagavatam, Prayers of Prahlad, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires, one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind grihamandakupe, a blind well full of snakes, following the general population. This is what everyone is doing. Enjoy, 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 and die and go to hell. No one wants to remember that part. I was doing this. I was following them. One after another, my heart filled with material desires. But your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? O Lord, you are my eternal companion. Forgetting you, I have suffered the kicks of Maya, birth after birth. If today the chance to meet you occurs again, then I will surely be able to rejoin you. Oh, dear friend, in your company I will experience great joy once again. In the early morning I will wander about in the cowherd fields and pastures, running and frolicking in the many forests of Braja. I will roll on the ground in spiritual ecstasy. Oh, when will that day be mine? Today, that remembrance of you came to me in a very nice way. Because I have a great longing, I called for you. I am your eternal servant, and therefore I desire your association so much. O Lord Krishna, except for you, there is no other means of success. I emphatically say to you, O brothers and sisters, you will obtain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord Krishna only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. So today is, we know it's the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada, and although we say that the disappearance day and the appearance day are none different, one fills us with happiness and one fills us with sadness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai. You want to say anything? Mataji, would like to, is it too late? Or Mataji can say something? Or tonight is better? Okay?
I don't have anything that comes very strongly to mind with which to share with you. But the points that were being spoken about Srila Prabhupada and his mood, the intensity of his mood of surrender and the complete giving of himself, and also as a result of that, how it was very difficult, actually, I think, even though it's a negative word to use, it was very difficult to be in his presence over a long period of time because he had this, as we were saying, just one thing on his mind. He looked at everything in the same way. He was just looking to see how this, how that, how this person, how that person could be engaged in the service of Krishna. And because we were so, at that time, so young, the mind is very restless, it's going here and there, thinking about things to do with our own life, or thinking about things that we're worrying about or wanting, so many different thoughts. And then you'd go into Srila Prabhupada's presence and it would be almost like frightening, because There was none of that there. There was no no food for this mental meandering tendency. And this Srila Prabhupada's point that this was the first lesson was always very sobering, because this first lesson is such a big one that we're not our bodies. Like Srila Prabhupada was saying on a tape yesterday, that when somebody is born, everyone celebrates, oh, it's a baby. He said, but if you were to think deeply, if you thought deeply, when someone is born, that means also that death, disease, old age are also coming now. And then they're born, it means that their death is born. Because as soon as they start to come, 1 day, 2 days old, 1 week, 2 weeks, death is coming closer. So this was so sobering all the time to be with Srila Prabhupada. So sober. It was, especially for myself as a woman, it was very, sometimes it felt like it was too much. Needed to get away from this, because how could you have a sense of well-being and positiveness about your life and what you wanted to achieve, and even in the service of Krishna, how could you not feel some negativity towards everything? So it was interesting, I was reflecting that therefore one comes into the association of such an exalted person and then one leaves again. And one again finds one's own level. And on that level one goes on with one's life as best one can, trying to absorb his teachings and his instructions and proceeding as best that one can. And then again, by Krishna's arrangement, you meet again. And again you have this feeling. I remember when Srila Prabhupada would come to Melbourne, there was a sort of a phenomena that I traced in myself. And that was that when he would first arrive, it would be so exciting and everyone would feel so happy, and I would also feel so exhilarated that here he was. He would come to the airport, get off the plane, we'd all be waiting, having a kirtan, anticipating seeing him, because practically we saw him once a year. Once a year, and probably for 3 or 4 or 5 was maximum. A long stay would be 5 or 6 days. And then he would come and the doors would open and he would come off the aeroplane and we would all start jumping up and down. And immediately, just as I'm sure there is some of this here, when there are many young brahmacharis together, or we were all young together, everyone is hoping to get him to look at them, to give a smile, to give some words of encouragement. So there would be kind of like, because it was rare, his association, a kind of a vying for some attention. We tried to find a good place to stand so that maybe when he came down the escalator, you'd be just standing there at the bottom of the escalator and he would notice you and give some warm smile, and perhaps he wouldn't say anything, just some look from his eyes would confirm that he recognized you and you were somehow or another successful in achieving some association with him. And then we would all come to the temple. And then he would begin his classes. And for myself, I was in my early 20s. Srila Prabhupada would start speaking this very strong, firm, strict philosophy, so fixed. You're not your body, this. And I had no access to the subject matter because I was too immature. So as the class would go on, I would start feeling a little deflated and a little disappointed and a little bit uncomfortable because he was so strict. And how could I achieve anything on what he was speaking? So then I would notice that the next thing that would happen, first thing was very high, second thing would become very low, very unhappy, very hopeless practically. And then 3 days, first day, second day, next day, you had to come again, and I wasn't feeling so eager to come the second day because I had to sit and listen. And I would listen again and Srila Prabhupada would speak on this very high level. And the second day I would feel to myself, well, yes, it's true. It's true, you are a fallen fool and you can't enter into any of this. Just accept it. just listen and just accept it. So again, I would be faced with this confronting experience of Srila Prabhupada's high standard of words, of preaching, of philosophy, of realization. And then by the third day, then you would be having sort of like all the stuffing, all the illusion would have been sort of like beaten out because his words remained very steadily strong. And then it was time for him to leave. And I remember the experience was that you'd come to the car and you felt like you had nothing. And he was leaving. And you would just look and feel as if something had been, nothing had been accomplished. And then again, he would look. And you would look at him and he would look at you. And he would smile. And again, there was a sense that maybe there was some hope, even though everything had been so embarrassing. And he would smile and place his hand, and then everything was left, and he would drive away. And after he had went, after he had gone, pay obeisances, get up, take note of what he had said, and another chance was given to try to apply it. So you go home, and there was in some ways a kind of a relief when he was gone, because the confrontation with this very high, pure standard of devotional service was lessened. And again, you'd come into perhaps a little illusion that, yes, actually everything is all right, I'm all right, let me get on with my devotional life. And again, you would start work, trying to apply, trying to remember, trying to study, trying to go on. And in this way, I remember one time reading in the Krishna book where Srila Prabhupada explained that in the association of the spiritual master, imperceptibly one makes great spiritual advancement. So it was like that. It had nothing to do with our qualification to apply, to follow, to assimilate, to actually do what Srila Prabhupada was presenting. But it had to do with the fact of being ready to put yourself through this process of being, as Srila Prabhupada sometimes said, the fire of ordeal, to come in the association of a completely pure person. It was not just delightful. Delight was there. But there were many other things also that were there. And one very strong thing was this cutting and slashing or molding or sanding away at the false ego. And that part wasn't altogether painful, wasn't altogether pleasant. But that pain allowed us to imperceptibly, gradually make some spiritual advancement towards this high standard that Srila Prabhupada never moved from. He would come down to us to give us some instruction, but he himself never came down from that platform. So now, many years later, with a little more maturity, greatly, of course, greatly appreciate that he never came down. And now I can see that the understanding that I have to come up is not resting only upon my shoulders, but it's resting, as Srila Prabhupada has given the process, it's resting within that process, and it's resting also on him. And he can very mercifully bring us up if he chooses to. So on Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day, you'll please forgive me, I usually don't like to speak because it's a very emotional day. But this is the one thing, this particular day feels very unpleasant. But this process of a visit of his also had contained this element of unpleasantness, which was part of a very powerful medicinal formula for reducing our attachment to this world and helping to situate us on this path of the process of actually becoming released from all this ignorance and all this attachment and all this confusion and all the instability and so forth that I myself personally would become aware of at this occasion, and placing us under his lotus feet for his shelter, his protection, his inspiration and his guidance. So therefore we must study, and therefore we must remember him, and we must understand that whatever we're given here, this is such a wonderful temple, it's such a wonderful opportunity to come here. Of course, you all live here, so the tendency of the mind is to see the faults. You see this and you see that. But somebody coming for a visit, they can see how many gifts you have here. And all these gifts are actually the blessings of Srila Prabhupada, coming through his faithful disciples, who a faithful disciple means that he acts as a pipeline, to deliver to you Srila Prabhupada's teachings intact and Srila Prabhupada's example and Srila Prabhupada's message. So please take this, because life is long and it has its good points and it has its difficult points as well. And through all of them, we have to continue faithfully in the pleasure and also in the pain, because we have only this. This is the only thing that brings us together. Otherwise, why would we look at each other and we've come from so many different places. But we've come and we're molded together, bonded together by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So this in truth is the message of his disappearance day, also his appearance day. And it is a fact for one who is on this transcendental position of intense intimate relationship internally, there is no difference between the 2 days. But for those of us who are striving to attain that platform, there is a feeling on this particular occasion of deeply missing his presence. But thank you very much for giving us a chance to be here with you and to share some thoughts, share some remembrance, and this way to bring, for myself, my memory back to life and to again appreciate the intense obligation and the intense gifts, wonderful gifts that Srila Prabhupada has given to us all. And in this way, perhaps we can together continue to try to spread, as he wanted, double it, triple it, always more. Sometimes it felt like a whip. When you'd say, Prabhupada, we made 100 devotees, double it. But Prabhupada, how can we do that? You can do it, just do it. And you would try, and Krishna would reciprocate with you more and more and more. So he was always pushing us towards the unlimited. And similarly, I know that you are also pushed here by his mercy through your Guru Maharaj to double it, to increase, to do more, to reach out to more people and to give them Krishna, to give them the mercy of Radha Gopinath. So I feel very fortunate to be here today with you all. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
One short story of sort of almost like an example of what Jagatwini Mataji was saying, how Prabhupada's very sweet presence also was very challenging to the false ego and everything connected with it. That in Melbourne in 1975, Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasan giving class, big Vyasasan like that, and the temple room was maybe two-thirds this size. And Prabhupada was giving class, and he was talking about something that's mentioned in the fifth canto. And he said that there are giant eagles that fly from planet to planet, and they hatch their eggs in the friction of the atmosphere. So Prabhupada would speak so strongly and definitively. And I don't know what most people were thinking when they heard that, or if people could even hear those kind of things. But I was wondering what that meant. So at the end of class, there was one disciple of Prabhupada who was very, a combination between brave and foolish. And he said, Prabhupada, at the end of the class, he was very grave. So he sat and he said, "Any questions?" It was almost as if he was daring anyone to challenge him or ask about this. So one devotee said, raised his hand, and Prabhupada called on him. And he said, "Prabhupada, in the class you mentioned giant eagles that fly from planet to planet." And Prabhupada said, "Yes." And he said, "It is quite hard to believe." And Prabhupada's reply was, "What do you know? You are still within the womb of your mother." So now we can all laugh. We did not laugh then, because everyone was thinking the same thing, but no one was either brave enough or foolish enough to ask it. Giant, because we're not trained in that way. So in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, it describes there is one substance, but it has four functions: mind, intelligence, false ego, and citta, or consciousness. This is in the material world. There is one substance, but according to how it functions, it's called either mind or intelligence or false ego or consciousness. This is in the material world. We cannot take those back to the spiritual world. So Prabhupada's association challenged the mind. It challenged the consciousness. It challenged the intelligence. And especially it challenged the false ego, the sense of importance, the self sense of self-importance, the sense of I am a devotee, that I am a good devotee, I'm this, I'm that. When actually, all we could ever hope to be is just an insignificant servant of the servants, Gopi Bhakta Padakamalaya Dasa. But that, no one goes to Bits Palani and all the schools to learn to take advanced service. We learn IT, we learn this, we learn that, we learn that. We gather our security in our life, we gather our friends and family to compound our illusion. And confronted with the flame of Prabhupada's association, unless you are of that same quality, you would burn. The impurities would burn. Giant eagles flying from planet to planet. My intelligence says no. And Prabhupada's words say, "What do you know? What does your intelligence know? What does the child within the womb of his mother know?" Nothing. It was heavy. To be in contact with the sun, You have fire. You have to be fire to come close and stay close. We like to, when it's cold in Vrindavan in the winter, you're always thinking, when will the sun come? When will the sun come? But then when the sun comes, you're thinking, when will the winter come? Because the sun is so hot. But yet, there was such a sweetness that was irresistible. We had the fortune to travel with Prabhupada when he left Australia and went for the last time into the United States. And we were with him for several weeks. And as Mataji was saying, there is imperceptible benefit. So, lava matra sarasanga savasri. Such benefit, but you don't know exactly. You become like fire by being in contact with the sun. You become hotter. But after being with Prabhupada, then we went to Los Angeles, and then we went to Dallas, Texas. And I had never done any deity worship before. And they had asked me to do some deity worship. So the moment I walked on the altar, without any prior thought, and this was about 3 weeks after being with Prabhupada, the first thing I thought, first thing I understood, first thing I perceived, that the feeling of being in the presence of Radha and Krishna, Radha Kala Chandri, was exactly the same sweetness as being with Prabhupada. Without any, didn't go through the intelligence or anything, there was no premeditation. So if you want to know what it was like being with Prabhupada, be very close to Radha Gopinath. That same Vrindavan sweetness Prabhupada carried with him. And therefore, despite the burningness of the sun sometimes, it was so sweet, it was irresistible, like Vrindavan is irresistible. Irresistible because of the sweetness. And Prabhupada, he didn't have that, he was doing so many things, but he didn't have any passion or frantic anxiety. Everything was very, his consciousness was fully clear with Vrindavan in it. Although he was very grave and he didn't show, just like people, they may have big diamonds and emeralds and rubies that are this big, but they don't walk around just showing everyone, this is how much my diamonds and rubies and emeralds. No, you keep that very tightly. So Prabhupada, in a similar way, he did not, he exhibited Vrindavan, but he did not talk always about Radha and Krishna. He talked, you're not your body, this, that, the materialists, the Mayavadis, rascals, this rascal, that rascal. But that was what was in his heart. Now, what do you want to say?
Because in the early days of my relationship with Srila Prabhupada, up till 1974, there was, first of all, a very ecstatic opportunity to surrender to him. And then some confusion arose due to the false ego and the various components of life at that time. But then by 1974, we were again coming back to a proper equilibrium. So Srila Prabhupada had requested us to try to stabilize our understanding because, of course, we were coming from the Western background, so it was very easy for us to drift off into something that didn't actually run compatible with the Vedic process. So Srila Prabhupada invited us to come to Mayapur and then to Vrindavan, hoping to stabilize any misunderstandings that might be there and strengthen us and also give us an opportunity to experience these holy places. So we went first to Mayapur, and then we traveled in 1974. I think it was the first major Mayapur festival. There had been one previous to that, but this was the one in which devotees from all over the world attended. And we traveled by train. They hired a carriage of a train, and the devotees went to Mathura, and then we went by bullock cart to Vrindavan, Tonga. And then when we got to Vrindavan, I immediately could see, oh, this is very nice. So then we stayed in Vrindavan for a week, and then it was time for us to return to Hong Kong, which wasn't exactly so nice because Hong Kong was very difficult. So we came to see Srila Prabhupada, and we asked his servant, could we see him? But sometimes they would be quite firm because they had to protect Srila Prabhupada's health and so forth. So we asked, could we see him before we went? And so his servant said, he wasn't sure. He was a little hesitant. So my husband became quite bold, and he said, come with me. And we went around the back of Prabhupada's house, which was not as it is now. The temple was not at that time built, and it was very open.
RCC columns. The temple, Krishna Balaram Mandir, wasn't built. But Prabhupada's house?
His room was there. So round the back a little bit, there was just a string and some sticks, and Prabhupada was sitting within an area, and they were giving him a massage. So I said, can we go in there? And he said, come with me. So I said, all right. So we ducked under the rope, and of course his secretary was somewhere else at this time and had told us to wait around the front. But here we were. We went under the rope, and we went and paid our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, who was taking his massage. And he was sitting there. And he looked at me, and he gave a big smile. And this was something that hadn't been for a little while because he'd been quite firm with us on various points. So he smiled very beamingly, very, very brightly, and he said, how do you like Vrindavan? And I said immediately, without any thought, everything had been very nervous at that stage because of correction was taking place, but without even a thought, I said, oh, it's wonderful, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, without even a thought, he said, you should come and live here. And then I looked at him and I said, but you just sent us back to Hong Kong. And then he thought. And then he said, then you should come for some months every year. You should come. He adjusted his... And I just laughed because it was so funny, because it was so spontaneous. He was spontaneous and I was spontaneous, and we both had the same thing. And my husband said, but I like Mayapur. So he must have given some comment. I don't remember that.
No, that was a different time.
I think you said it then as well. But he just said, you should come and live here. So it was many, 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 many years later that we went to live in Vrindavan. But we always understood that, despite Srila Prabhupada's chastisement and the heaviness of not being able to come up to satisfy his expectations, the reward, when one was ready for it, is Vrindavan. Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai.
It's getting late. In Hong Kong, when Prabhupada visited in 1974, just before that Mayapur festival, he told me that after you're preaching for 10 years, then you can go live in Vrindavan. And then he said that, and I sort of forgot about that, those words of his. And then at one point in 1982, I was visiting Vrindavan, and suddenly it was organized that I'd come and live in Vrindavan, that we'd come and live in Vrindavan. And then I had forgotten what Prabhupada had said. And then years later, I was examining my years in Krishna consciousness and months and everything, and I added up all the months of preaching before that time, and it was 10 years and just a few months. So I saw that by Prabhupada's mercy, by the mercy of the spiritual master, when he gives a blessing like that, then it will come. But without blessings, if we try to do something on our own, then the proper fruit won't get there. And Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha, because sometimes we're engaged so much in preaching work and serving the order of the spiritual master that we feel that we don't have enough time for our own, for the activities that really inspire us and really give us the spiritual upliftment that we want. But Srila Jiva Goswami explains that just by Guru Seva, every result can be achieved. So it's not that we, in the name of Guru Seva, we neglect hearing, chanting, remembering, and the regular practices. But if by the Guru's order, he's given us something, just by devotion to that order, then the mercy of Sri Vrindavan Dham and the final results will come. And on somewhat of an other topic, that Prabhupada's quality of tolerance, when I think of what Prabhupada's qualities that are most appreciated, I seem to come to this quality of tolerance. He was such it's hard to imagine what he went through with crazy hippies in the beginning. At 70 years old, that lecture that I had played a short part of when Prabhupada was 69, 70, he was 70 years old then, and it was a 2-hour lecture that he had given. And that was just a 15-minute segment. So Prabhupada was playing the drum. He was doing everything himself. He was lecturing. He was cooking for a time. The devotees didn't know anything. They didn't know anything about Vaishnava Sadachar. They didn't know anything. Always fighting who was going to be the center. Because everyone was so young, and to give such young people such absolute knowledge when there was no maturity of life and there was no one older than them other than Prabhupada. He was the only adult in the movement, practically speaking. When I was 21, I was one of the oldest devotees. So we all grew up without anyone older than us. Now, more or less, is the first time that ISKCON has had people of grandfatherly age. Before that, 21, 22 was the oldest, 24, 26, 32, 35. It was quite incomplete. And Prabhupada yet wanted everyone, pushing everyone always, to preach and expand the movement. But oh, how tolerant he had to be to deal with all the false egos, the difficulties of management, the difficulties in keeping the devotees cooperatively working together. And that, you were speaking about this morning, is something that Prabhupada said in his last days. The devotee, one of the devotees, his secretary, said to Prabhupada, should we ask all the devotees to come? They will all come because everyone loves you. So everyone will come from all over the world to see you now. And Prabhupada was fully bedridden. And Prabhupada's reply was very grave. Very gravely was, the test of how much they love me will be how much they will cooperate to push on the movement. Because cooperation in Kali Yuga is the most difficult thing. Prabhupada, one Mataji, Sava Bhavana Prabhu's wife, she told the story a few years ago at Janmashtami, or Prabhupada's disappearance ceremony, that they were living in India, and she went to Prabhupada in his room in Delhi and said, "Prabhupada, the devotees are always fighting with each other. They're always fighting with each other." And Prabhupada says, "It is both their faults. If two devotees are fighting, it is both their faults." Why? Because it takes two to fight. You can't fight if the other person isn't fighting with you. So that means, Prabhupada said, that both were not humble enough if there is a fight. Because if one was humble enough and refused to fight and said, yes, Prabhu, whatever you say, then there would be no fight. So it means both. If there's a fight, it means both are at fault, Prabhupada said. And another time in Japan, when one devotee, Sadama Vipra Maharaj, he wanted to go to the Philippines to open up a temple, but he wanted to go alone, by himself. So I didn't think it was a good idea. So I asked Prabhupada, asked him if he could send someone to go with him. So Prabhupada, we were walking, and Prabhupada suggested, why doesn't Trivikram Maharaj go with him? And Sudama Vipra was a very heavy type of person, and Trivikram Maharaj is also a very strong person. So Prabhupada said, why doesn't Trivikram Swami go with him? He asked me. So I have a tendency, when people ask me, I say what's on my mind. So I said, no, I don't think it's a good idea. And Prabhupada said, why? So I said, because this one's very strong and this one's very strong. I think they will have difficulty deciding who will surrender to who. And Prabhupada replied, it doesn't make any difference who surrenders to who. Same point. It doesn't make any difference who surrenders to who. Cooperation is the most difficult thing in Kali Yuga, and we pray that all the devotees in Radha Gopinath Mandir just increase and increase and increase and increase their ability out of their affection for the deities and the other devotees, and they just simply increase their ability to cooperate. Then something wonderful will be done. Something more wonderful will be done. Unlimitedly wonderful will be done. Prabhupada once said that if the devotees would surrender, like in the battle of Kurukshetra, we could take over the world in 18 days. So who will surrender as Prabhupada surrendered fully? So not who, but so many devotees are being requested to give themselves in such a wonderful way.
You want to say something?
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sisi Vala Gopinath Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande.